really to let people know that it's not true that we can never demonstrate a relationship between pollution in the environment and illness in our community. It can be done. It's difficult to do, but it can be done. And that we need to act on that information. We need to be much smarter about looking for these correlations, and we need to be much smarter about reducing environmental exposures. And I'm especially concerned about what's happening overseas in China specifically, which is now by far the overwhelmingly dominant player in the chemical industry, where the Toms River process is repeating itself with tragic consequences. And I'm very pleased that a Chinese language version of Toms River has just been published, because I very much want the word to spread in China specifically, where environmental exposures are so high.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. We were just listening to an archived episode of Locus Focus. We had a problem getting hold of our guest for today. You were listening to Barbara Bernstein talk with Dan Fagan about his book, Toms River, A Story of Science and Salvation. Up next, we're going to be turning to the Monday Morning Radio Zine, where we will be speaking with author Aspen Baker about her new book, Pro-Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight, about the access to the abortion controversy, after these messages.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill 4 upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website, and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KBOO bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KBOO's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com.
Is rent too damn high?
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you should join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Come tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
This is Kathleen Stevenson. My guest is Aspen Baker, who is leading a movement to transform the abortion conflict. She is the founder and executive director of Exhale, a nonprofit that offers emotional support after an abortion, free of judgment and politics. She has won numerous awards for her work. She has a new book called Pro-Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. In Pro-Voice, Aspen Baker shares what led her to develop an organization that offers tools for anyone to have a compassionate discussion about the topic of abortion. She joins us by phone from Oakland, California. Aspen Baker, thanks very much for being on KBOO Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Kathleen.
Your work grew out of your experiences you had when you had an abortion at the age of 24. Can you talk about how you developed the pro-voice philosophy?
I grew up in a Christian pro-life community in Southern California, and as a kid, the idea of an abortion made me so sad that I knew I would never have one. And so when I got pregnant right out of college, that was my first thought. I'm going to have a baby. I'm going to be a mom. And then I went through a difficult decision-making process and eventually decided to have an abortion. And afterwards, when I sort of clued into the conflict that was taking place and the conversation, all I really heard were people yelling and fighting at each other. And no one, I wasn't hearing from women who'd had abortions. And at that point, I didn't think I really knew anyone who'd had an abortion. And then I found out that the numbers were really high and abortion was, in fact, really common, that about 1 in 3 women in America will have an abortion in their lifetime. So I thought it was really strange that it was this very common thing that women were experiencing, yet our voices and our stories weren't really seen and weren't a part of the public conversation. So I co-founded Exhale to start listening to people's experiences with abortion, and we started a talk line that eventually became national and multilingual. And from the beginning, we wanted to be a place of support and respect for women from all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of values and all kinds of beliefs. And so we didn't use a label at first because we thought it was a barrier. And then we realized that we were sort of defining ourselves by what we were not. But we were actually taking a very strong stand. We were taking a strong stand for compassion and for empathy and for listening and for connecting even across our differences. So we invented Pro-Voice, which is a framework for how to turn conflict into conversation, and its hallmarks are listening and storytelling. So I wrote the book to talk about this whole process that we have been on as an organization and as a movement.
Right, and maybe before we get into talking about how you do the kind of approach to discussing abortion that you do, maybe we could talk a minute, a little bit more about the issues and how they led up to that. And you say that in talking about abortion, the approach of both the, and even the terms sometimes are controversial. So you say this, the approach of both the pro-life side and the pro-choice side are aligned in their strategic approaches to storytelling. Can you explain that?
Both sides do use stories as part of political strategy. So the pro-life side often talks about women who regret their abortions. And the truth is, some women do regret their abortions, and we hear from those women on the Exhale talk line, and we provide support. But the pro-life side will often just really prioritize those because they want to convince people that regretting an abortion is so bad that no one should ever go through that, so abortion should be illegal. And then on the other side, on the pro-choice side, for many years, you really only heard sort of two stories of abortion. One was the horror of a back alley abortion and why no one should ever have to go through that, or how, you know, abortion really, you know, sort of saved a woman from a difficult life, or how it allowed her to achieve her goals. There's these two very simple pro-choice stories, and that has changed, and there's a couple more stories that are available, but both sides tend to use and highlight and amplify the stories that sort of best exemplifies what they're trying to get after and their goals. And that leaves out a lot of women and a lot of stories, the stories that are more complex, stories of women who feel like it was the best decision and feel a lot of sadness, you know, potentially a feminist who regrets her abortion or a Catholic who's grateful for hers. But there's a lot more nuances and layers in people's stories than you would ever know if you only listen to the stories that are told by activists on both sides.
Why do you think that having had an abortion is information that most women keep to themselves?
Abortion is, there's a lot of messages that we get for why we should keep abortion to ourselves. And certainly on the pro-life side or from that you know, side, there could be a lot of shaming and a lot of judgment that this was the wrong thing to do. And on the other side, on the pro-choice side, often the message of privacy, of you know, this is for only you to know and only you and your doctor, no one else needs to know, still sort of reaffirms that this is something to keep to yourself and not something to bring out publicly to talk about our shared experiences.
Isn't there also the fact that if someone talks about this decision, they may open themselves up to all kind of things that they have fears about, or all kind of discussions that people might put them in some pigeonhole?
Right? Yeah, there is incredible risk and consequence for talking openly about abortion, or even not so open, you know, openly to your best friend, or let alone openly on the internet or Twitter. Talking about having an abortion can open people up for judgment. It can open people up for ridicule. And not everyone really knows how to listen to a story. So that can be also be a hard thing to figure out, is I'm turning to someone to tell them what I went through, and they don't really know how to respond in a way that makes me feel supported or heard. So we don't have a lot of, you know, cultural muscle. We don't have a lot of familiarity about how to talk to one another about the abortions that we have in our lives, or that in the lives of our loved ones, that we all really know a lot of the talking points and the facts, and we know how to fight about abortion. That's not confusing. People are pretty skilled about that, but we don't have as much experience talking with one another about this personal experience that we have.
Let's talk about the aspects of pro-voice that you delineate, the listening, storytelling, and embracing gray areas. It looks like there are the three areas. So, First of all, how does someone listen non-judgmentally?
It's really important when we're thinking about abortion that we know it's important, and we know that there is plenty to fight about. But when someone is talking to you about their own personal experience with abortion, this is a critical moment to really meet someone where they are as someone in your life that you care about. And so listening is critical. And there's a couple of tools that anyone can use. And the first is to ask open-ended questions. You can ask someone how they're feeling. You can ask someone what an abortion was like for them. You can ask them what they hope for now. But open-ended questions give the other person the room and space to talk and define the experience for themselves, instead of what other, you know, whatever judgment or assumption that you might be making about it. And the second thing that can help someone really feel heard and can show that you're listening is to reflect their language. So if someone is talking about their own abortion and they use the term baby, you can say baby. And if someone is using the term fetus, you can say fetus. Reflecting the language of the person who's speaking conveys that you're interested in understanding what they're going through. And that goes a long way to someone feeling heard.
And the whole thing of putting yourself in someone else's shoes, what does that really mean in this kind of pro-voice atmosphere that you want to create?
So storytelling, telling a story, is a way for someone to walk in your shoes. And, you know, like I said before, telling the story or being open about abortion can come with a lot of risk. But if we're in a one-on-one conversation, if we're having an intimate conversation with someone in our life and we're sharing a story, it's also important to realize that that other person might not actually make the same decision as you. And given the same set of circumstances, they, you know, may have told their parents when you didn't, for example. But it's that moment when someone can imagine themselves in their shoes that it creates the real empathy and connection. So part of ProVoice and embracing the gray areas is that we don't all have to end up in the same place, that we don't all have to agree, you know, about the politics or abortion or what anyone's individual decision is, but we create an environment where we can imagine ourselves in someone else's shoes, and that empathy creates the connection that allows us to have difficult conversations.
What is ethical storytelling?
In this day and age, when stories around abortion can be so politicized, it's really important that the person whose story is being told has ownership over their own story and gets to determine how their story is going to be used in advocacy purposes. If I have told my story and I've decided that I want to use it towards political ends, that's awesome. And I should be in an informed decision-making position with the activists that are using my story so that I know when and how it's going to be used. It's a critically important part of making sure that we're working with individual people who have actual stories versus seeing these stories as a commodity.
And you have an example of that in the book. Is there anything you want to say to kind of give an example of when something is ethical storytelling and when it's not?
So years ago, during the run-up to the 2008 election, a documentary filmmaker approached my organization because they wanted to put a face on the issues that were going to be present in the election. And so they wanted to interview somebody who'd had an abortion. And one of our volunteers agreed to do that because she didn't want other women who'd had abortions to feel alone. And so she was interviewed by this documentary filmmaker. And later on, when we looked at the videos, you know, there was so much of like her story and her personality that was really present. And then the way that that video ended was, you know, and in the end, I felt relief. You know, it kind of came to this very simple, like, pro-choice conclusion talking point, which was not really something that she had said beforehand. And when the video was up on YouTube, it started to get a lot of hateful comments. And one day when Monica was on YouTube, her own video popped up and she saw all these comments and she was like, I don't want my story up there anymore. Like, I want to get it off. I don't feel comfortable. And so she was able to reach out to the filmmaker and he took it off. So there's a couple of lessons in there. One is that someone's experience with their story can change over time, and what feels good one day might not feel good another day, and that person needs to keep control over that. So I think it was a great example of the documentary filmmaker saying, yeah, let's pull it off if you don't want it anymore. And that's a really hard thing to do, and not a lot of filmmakers would do that. I think the second piece is that it was a big difference from, you know, a filmmaker sort of telling someone else's story and the conclusions that they were drawing from it versus the ability of Monica to tell her own story. So this experience led us into doing some work with the Center for Digital Storytelling to help women create digital stories so they could tell them in their own voice and in their own words.
And then the whole area that you mentioned, referred to a couple times, embracing gray areas. Can you explain what that really means?
I think there's a tendency when it comes to talking about the abortion conflict of wanting to come up with simple solutions. And so often it's like, well, if one side can do this and the other side can do this, then we can have, you know, this common ground agenda. And why can't that just happen? And there's no shortage of ideas for how to solve this. If it was that simple and if it was that easy, then it would have been done a long time ago. And so the reality is that abortion is complex and there are a lot of layers and there are a lot of gray areas. And so ProVoice helps us live in the middle of that complexity, even with a lot of pressure to make it simple. And personal experience is the prime place where gray areas can really be explored. And that's where the tools of listening and storytelling help us to really be comfortable in the gray area, even though there's so much black and white debate going on around us.
You're listening to KBOO Public Affairs. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and I'm speaking with Aspen Baker on the Radio Zine. We're talking about her new book, Pro Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. Can this method of talking about abortion, can it be transferred to discussion of other issues that divide people?
So much of the conflict and polarization that happens in this country is because we try to create this battlefield mentality, this are you with us or against us stance. You know, gun violence is certainly another one of those areas. Race and racism is another one of those areas. And what Pro Voice helps us do is step away from that battlefield mentality and to think about each other as human beings and to step into those gray areas with one another. Because the truth is, you know, there's people that, like abortion, are in our lives that have had abortions, people in our lives who've not had abortions, people in our lives who are pro-choice and pro-life, and we can find ways to connect with each other. You know, if we use the realm of personal experience, there's people in our lives who are gun owners, there's people in our lives who suffer from gun violence, that there are personal experiences that we need to be able to talk to one another about, rather than solely rely on the political debate to kind of solve these issues for us.
Do you feel there is a role for the political debate, that there's a role for advocacy and the movements that work on these issues?
Absolutely. And I hope that's one thing people understand, is I'm not saying we shouldn't be fighting ever or that there shouldn't be political debate or advocacy. When it comes to abortion, though, it's generally the only way that abortion gets talked about in this country, that we don't have the personal, intimate community conversations that we need to have. And so when we, as you know, families and communities are able to have these conversations in a nuanced, supportive, respectful way, we're going to start demanding that our politics and our politicians talk about abortion that way too. So the culture can move the political debate into a more nuanced and gray area. If we're expecting the political realm to lead us in that direction, it's probably not going to happen.
And just to go back again to the principles of Pro Voice and how someone listens, you know, I understand how the volunteers or the workers who are professional listeners, so to speak, I understand how they could adopt this method, but I'm just trying to transpose it to a family situation.
Mm-hmm.
And how most conversations go, where people have differing opinions, how people can use this to have the kind of conversation you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you would add for someone wanting to try to adopt this in their own personal life in that kind of situation?
Yeah, family is maybe the most difficult and most important place to be able to be pro-voice. And it's certainly where we have heard from a lot of our volunteers and pro-voice advocates that they use pro-voice the most in their own families, actually. I don't know that there is a rocket science answer that's any different from what I've given before, in that we can listen to the people in our families and we can meet them where we are and we can ask them open-ended questions and validate their experience. And then we can tell personal stories about our own. And that is often enough to change the dynamic. So if before there was a family, you know, dinner and everyone's sort of fighting and they brought their facts and their talking points to try to persuade the other side, if we stop trying to persuade for the moment and just invite by being open and by being curious, that is often enough to shift the conversation.
And it seems like maybe bearing in mind that the conversation is not going to end with someone winning or losing. or other things that you're used to those kind of conversations ending with. It seems like
that's a really good point.
It would maybe just end with a, I'm glad we could each share our points of view or something. I'm not sure.
You know, we're in conversation for our lives. You know, there's rarely a time when there's a sort of clear winner and clear loser, and that's, and family is probably not a good place to try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be in relationship with our family members. I mean, I guess we don't have to, but many of us want to be in relationship with our family members, even, you know, when we disagree about things. And that, so it's not a horrible model to think about, you know, our fellow citizens and our neighbors and other people we disagree with, that we need to be in relationship with each other for a really long time.
And what do you say when you're asked how you stand on the abortion issue?
Yeah, so it's pretty common, because I talk about abortion, that the response is to try to, you know, get me to be on one side or the other, and no, really, no, where do you really stand? Well, if you really had to, if your back was pushed up against the wall, what would you do? And, you know, I think that's part of, it's in one of the examples about how we don't actually really talk about abortion, that we just try to put each other, you know, in one camp or the other. Are you with me or are you against me? And then that's all I need to know. And that's not enough of a question, and it doesn't really help us, you know, build conversation, the kind of conversations that we need. So I don't answer it, and it makes people really frustrated.
Is it difficult for you to stay in that place?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And in some ways it gets easier, in some ways it gets harder. I mean, initially starting the organization and Pro Voice, there was incredible pressure to pick a side, and a belief that, you know, not picking a side was naive, wishy-washy, you know, mushy, you know, sort of all of these things. It's like, it's not strong, it's not important, and it's not hard. And I believed that for a while. And then we created the Exhale Talk Line, and then we created e-cards, and then we helped women tell their stories, and then we traveled around the country opening conversations. And so I've gotten to have 15 years of experience of what it's like to talk about abortion in places that you wouldn't expect, and to do it in unexpected ways that leave, with people leaving a room feeling uplifted and inspired rather than angry and pissed off. And so I've gained experience that reminds me why it's so useful to use Pro Voice. And, you know, now with the book and doing lots of radio interviews, again, it's a challenge again, because it's a new way of looking and a new way of thinking about abortion that is being introduced to lots of new people. So it's always difficult, and yet I believe in it, so that's what I have to do.
How do you see the future with the, as young people's world changes, is different from older people who have had this discussion for much longer? How do you see this trending or working out in the future?
I feel hopeful. I feel hopeful that a younger generation is very comfortable with self-expression and public self-expression, and that there's all kinds of ways that people are starting to talk about their hidden experiences and their hidden stories, and abortion is one, and sex and sexuality and sexual assault and race and ethnicity, that there's all of these ways that people are now bringing their personal experiences into the public sphere. And I get that it feels chaotic and we're not really sure what's going to happen next, but that's where we get new insights and new wisdom for what needs to be created next. So that tendency of the new generation to talk openly, the tools that are now available to talk openly and connect, and the fact that more and more people are being open about their abortion experiences, for me, all points to a lot of hope and change in the future.
Is there anything that you feel is important to say that we haven't touched on?
I would just ask that people visit my website, which is aspenbaker.com, and on the website they can take a listening quiz, they can sign the Pro Voice Pledge, and that there is guides on both listening and storytelling.
And that's aspenbaker.com?
Yes.
Okay. I want to thank you for speaking with us about this.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, thank you, and wish you the best with your work and your organization.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it. Okay.
You've been listening to an interview with Aspen Baker. She is the founder and executive director of Exhale, and she is the author of the new book, Pro Voice, How to Keep Listening When the World Wants a Fight. This is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine on KBOO Portland. If you missed part of this interview or want to hear it again, you can go to kboo.fm/radiozine should be on the website in the next hour or so.
Attention, KBOO members. You are invited to give your feedback on KBOO's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KBOO board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance to help define KBOO's guiding principles and priorities. Visit KBOO.fm to review the draft mission and vision statements and submit your comments. Paper copies of the draft statements are also available at the station. Comments are due July 17th. If you have questions, please contact Monica Beamer at monica@kboo.org. Thank you for contributing to the development of KBOO's mission and vision statements and for your support of community radio.
Now that intro was from our engineer, Joe. We have two people that have been live in studio. What a gift. Good morning. This is Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher at KBOO 90.7 FM Portland on this warm, warm summer day. A lot of us have been thinking about backyards and helping plants, wildlife, and nature kind of manage this stressful heat wave. And today we have with us in studio